good spell. We join a Mariana good spell. It's off and on and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 good spell show.
Okay. This is the DS106 good spell. Fussing splendidly since 2013 on the DS106 Goods Radio for Life. One of 106 bullets from the blog post 106 published by the DS106 Shrink at 106am on Tumblr at the end of the Headless 13 run of DS106. Gospel radio for the DS106 generation. Mantras and koans that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, futzing, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Good evening, John. How are you this evening?
I think I'm futzing away quite splendidly.
We are futzing splendidly. Shh, don't tell anybody. They won't know we had to do it twice.
No. I'm putting this wholly down to adding a hotkey to silence my mic, which makes it harder for me to use my keyboard. I think I'm probably going to... This is why I quit this before, Mariana. And I've just quit it again to give me free hands. So, there must be an easier way to do this.
We might get some advice from Twitter, from our million listeners.
Yeah. So, we are on Bullets 60 and 61. I'm not exactly sure what episode this is, but we must be coming up for about the 50th episode quite soon, I think. Maybe about 46, which is actually... Episode 46 is went out. We've had a couple that weren't numbered. So we're approaching 50, our 50th broadcast. Mm-hmm. And we're hitting bullet number 60. And this is maybe a good one for... getting near halfway through our 106 bullets. Bullet number 60 is what keeps me going. The dedication and role modelling of the few people who see the precious nature of story in the web and are willing to share with no strings attached. And bullet number 61, that there ain't no MOOC that does that. There ain't no university that does that. Organisations don't do that. People do. So...
I put them together because it seemed to kind of, you know, to follow really all of the, you know, both of those. I guess it was, you know, at the end of Headless 13, I was exhausted. I still remember how exhausted I was. And so there is that thing about, you know, what actually keeps you going when it is such hard work, when it is, you know, when you're doing it because you want to, because you're not going to get any, you know, any qualification, you're not going to get any bit of paper, you're not going to get anything. In fact, in my world, half the people I know who, you know, who could pay me money, who could give me budgets, you know, didn't even know that I was doing it and didn't care. So, you know, what keeps us going?
So, I said, what kept you going to that end of that that run?
Well, it is really to do with the people. I mean, we've spoken about before, haven't we, about the kind of it's a kind of, I would say, a quiet community, in as much as, you know, often, you know, you don't you know, there are people that are not there all the time, but you do have, you know, people who really, really embody this ideals of what the web could be, what open education could be, you know, how wonderful storytelling is and what an amazing tool the web can be to help you shape a story, tell the story. And there is a sense of generosity, I think, in DS106 that I have not found elsewhere.
I think you pretty much right, the idea of communication and collaboration online. And I think there are definitely pockets of it all over the place, but DS106 just is a shining example. And the second bullet you go on say that there isn't a MOOC that does it, and there isn't a university that does it. And I guess if you sign up, the dropout rate from real life university courses is pretty low compared to the dropout rate from MOOCs. And I wonder, I was thinking about this today because, as I said earlier, I was reading a post by Ian Guest, who was talking about the fact how he dropped out of a MOOC which was designed, I think, to teach you a bit of data handling with Python. And he just found it was too much. He was going to need too much effort to keep it up. And I wonder if there's something about just the fact that we've only really just scratched the surface with this thing, online collaboration and online learning. Then how long have we been doing it? Not very long. How long have universities and schools been trying to do it? Quite a long time. And, you know, if 80% of people drop out of a MOOC or half a dozen people drop out of an online course of any sort, it's something to learn from, something to think about, but I think it's early days to be getting upset about it.
Yes, I don't. I guess for me, it's not about yes, I think it is early days, and I don't know, for example, what happens when you are doing DS106 for a qualification, as the people at the University of Mary Washington do. I guess the experience is different. Like, suppose I'm thinking about the open participants and the kind of constant question that often is asked about what is it, the kind of all retention rate, and what can we do to make sure that people don't drop out as much as they do, all that kind of thing. And it is useful. It would be useful to gather that data. Just looking at Twitter, and we have more than a million listeners, we do. They're fighting to be the million listeners here.
There's a dog in the house.
There's a dog in the house.
I quite like to come to that, the project idea and sort of the participant-led bit as a driver. Maybe at some point tonight, because I think it's an interesting point. I wonder if what we should be looking at in something that's a small, cosy online learning environment is not worrying if people drop out, but worrying about losing people who are leaving for the wrong reason, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I guess that's the interesting question. It's like what would be a wrong reason be? When really the way that we kind of set things up in DS106 open certainly is pop in when you can, do what you can, and when you can't, it's okay too, and then come back anytime, and we'll be glad to see you. What would a wrong reason be there? And I think that's part some of the difficulty really in trying to say, is there more that we could be doing to keep people? Would we want to even? Because I don't know that, certainly from the perspective of the open course, which is a kind of more of a self-organizing thing, it's probably not as meaningful a question as if as if you were future learn and you were wanting to make money out of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. I think that's.
Thank you. Now that Jim has become a corporate being, maybe he wants to take it and privatize it and capitalize on it and some other ice.
Yeah, it seems quite unlikely unless there's something strange in the air of the Italian air that's got to his head. And Moses and Alan's kicking back and saying, it's preferable to look at who drops into DS106 and. I think he's right, and as usual, Alan always takes the most positive view of things. But I'm kind of interested that if somebody leaves for say something that just they don't get the wrong intervention at the right time, that sort of thing, that they need a wee bit of help with something, and you know, to get to the point where they could really maybe gain something. And for the lack of a comment, or for the lack of, you know, just something that
I know there are. I know there are people, certainly people who I know outside of the S106, who are always intending on doing the S106, but never get around to it. There are a lot of those.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether, you know, there would be questions that one could ask about, you know, that's a kind of person that, you know, they are the ones that don't even start. I've also had people who are now a fairly integral part of the DS106 community who have said to me, but you know, at the beginning it was, I really couldn't work out what was going on, and I did feel a little bit like it was an in crowd and that I didn't understand the jokes, and you know, that it was all of it, I don't get it. And I think from a perspective of joining in as an open participant, that, you know, can be something that deters people. I think it's easier when we've got a run of something, and then people can join. And I think then, you know, we do a lot of that, try to welcome people, to make sure that if they're new, that we point them in the right direction for things, and, you know, all of that. We try a lot to do that, a lot, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you don't miss people. I guess it's inevitable in some ways. Having said that, take, for example, the summer, where we were doing the Prisoner 106 and we were doing the Bergeron 106. It's like you say, the groups were really so small that you can take one or two, two or three, three or four new people and really give them a whole lot of attention. And that, you know, is something that I think makes the that sense of integration for the open participant much easier, because you're not talking Coursera numbers or Future Learn numbers.
So what? Maybe it's a really a bad idea to think of the sort of open things as a course. They're more of a sort of self-study group or something like that. You know, I'm thinking this is back to...
Yeah, I was going to say, and yet, you know, the fact that there was a course, and this maybe goes back to Alan's comment about the projects and GIFACROM at the time that we were doing this, you know, the fact that there was a course and that you were completing each week and there was something else and there was something else and there was an end date, there was something, you know, important about the event that I think made us all work a bit harder.
Well, I think as soon as you put your name down for something, there's some sort of commitment there. And if it's a project that takes a while to build up and keep people, you know, you make a sort of social contract with the people in the group. To, you know, we're going to get this finished, we're going to get this radio show finished, or we're going to do, and, you know, I think we're pretty forgiving about, or certainly I feel I've been forgiven quite a lot for maybe not stepping up as far as you should sometimes or could, due to time and other things. But it kind of all wriggles through and works out. But I think that kind of glue almost of saying, yeah, I'll be part of this, and the fact it is a small group. If you say, I'll be part of a MOOC or a large scale course, you're not necessarily, you know, I don't think it's like, oh, you don't have the same feeling that I'm letting a group of people down, or there'll be a problem with people finishing this if I go. I guess small is quite beautiful in that way.
That is a very, I think that's true. I mean, I have done ex-MOOCs where I've done the whole thing, completed it and got my certificate, and I never talked to anybody.
Yeah.
I had no interest in talking to anybody, let me be clear. It wasn't that I was just Billy Nomates and nobody wanted to talk to me. I just didn't want to talk to me because I was there for a particular thing that I wanted to learn and I wanted to complete. So it's a different kind of thing, absolutely. And there you have no kind of sense of letting another person down. But it's more than that. It's not anybody, is it? I mean, we build relationships with each other. And so there is something about how you've agreed, say, like the Jifacrom project. You know, there were so many links and connections to that, that, you know, we were all working so hard to get that going. And it was a lot of work. So I guess, you know, you would have, yeah, there was definitely that social contract and that sense of you don't want to, as we would say, you don't want to let your mates down.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is you've got a friendship group there, maybe an online friendship group, and I think that's very difficult to do at scale. And I certainly know that I've started two Future Learn courses, one of which I managed the first week, and the other one I did quite a lot of. And the thing I noticed was, you were encouraged to comment on people's work and things, but there was hundreds of people in this comment stream. So you never really, I could never figure out if, you know, this person I was talking to or commenting on had, you know, was the same person that I talked to last week or whatever. I didn't get any sense of personality there, or any sort of, it just went by too fast. It's like as if you joined Twitter and immediately got 2,000 followers. You know, you just see all this stuff coming by and it goes crazy. So I just right across learning, I think small groups tend to be useful, and I'm sure that we'll work out how big groups can be managed and split up, and I've seen that in some of the big classes, how you form wee groups, or people form relationships in there with one or two other people and sort of bounce back and forward for a while as they go through bits of the course.
I was listening. I have never done it, but Modpo, the modern poetry one.
All right. No.
I am not going to remember his name. I think his first name is Al, but I don't remember the guy who runs it anyway. And he runs it on Coursera. And he manages to create the kind of thing that we would say we have in the S106, but in the Coursera type numbers. And the way that he does it is through using kind of local groups, through using lots and lots and lots of teaching assistants. He has a whole lot of different ways in which he involves people. And the big thing, it's not dissimilar to us in the sense that his big thing is about that everybody will get a comment, will get a thing within, I think, talks about something like 24 hours of them, posting something, because he feels that the thing that is the most important is to have that sense of being present. And I was speaking with Jenny McNess, who she's done it several times and loves it. And she was saying that one of the things that she thinks it makes the course very successful, from her perspective at least, is that the guy has like a little office somewhere in what is his university, which is the kind of library, the kind of place that Modpo lives in, and shows this to all the students on videos all the time. And so she was saying, even though I've never been there, it feels to me when I do the course like I am there, like there is a space, like I belong to something that exists. And I thought that was a really interesting comment in terms of this concept of, you know, the kind of spaces that we create online, you know, and that sometimes just by showing this is where I hang out, when I'm teaching, when I do, you know, and I think he actually does the videos, the kind of small group videos in that office, so that he is kind of creating that sense for everybody. The other thing which I think was interesting, I heard a keynote speech from him, and I was so impressed. The guy seems, you know, really on the ball. And he said, you know, that the other thing he thought was absolutely crucial to create that sense of community was that everything that the students did, produced, all the analysis, all of the things, has in some way to get reused the next time. So that, you know, people feel like, you know, whatever they put in there, is somebody is attending to it.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it was really interesting. So that's an example, I suppose, of something that is massive in as much as numbers and so on, where he would argue he's creating that same sense of small community that maybe we do on DS106. So that's an interesting comparison.
I imagine it must be just a wheel of work.
Yes, he does say that.
Yeah, I mean,
he says a thing that nobody ever asks. They say, is it scalable? Is it doable? Yes, it is. But nobody ever asks how long it takes.
I mean, I did a couple of sort of DS106 inspired courses for classes this year on just teaching classes how to use blogs on Glovo where I work, at least for the next couple of weeks. And one of them I did over 10 weeks and the other over 6. And I think there was 50 odd classes in the first one. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, I was shattered because I decided that I would answer every email and pretty much comment on every post that was made.
Yes.
And it ended up over that period I had written hundreds of emails and hundreds of comments. And I can't imagine how you would do it at any bigger scale without other people to help, or for it to be your full time. Do that and nothing more.
I think he does have lots of people to help, and the people who are helping, his kind of teaching assistants and so on, also become they have a fairly active role in the whole of the course. So then they are part. Kind of like what we would say and do in DS106 about, you know, the instructors do the same things as the participants are doing. Well, I think he kind of has that same sort of policy. And so for all the students, they get to know the teaching assistants. They are part of the whole thing. And so getting a comment from them is just as valuable as getting a comment from somebody else. And I guess then you do create that sense of we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Which I do think is something that is often missed about DS106, and one of the most important things that makes it work, that, you know, everybody jumps in and does, rather than talk about.
I'm just seeing a wee tweet from Kathy, which pushes back against that, because she says small groups tethered to large theme course allow working as well as connects, fits more learning preferences. And I guess that's true. There might be people that learn from material that just never surface. You know, they do some stuff, they learn, but they don't necessarily post about it. Or
it's quite well known, of course, the whole thing about the lurking and as a learning preference. And I guess people do on the DS106 stream. You know, they come on, they learn, they maybe, you know, pick up some resources, etc., and in a way that is something that makes the open courses valuable for all of us, that we can have something, you know, when we go and look for a tutorial, when we go and look for something, the fact that it is very, you know, it's available for anybody. You don't have to talk to anybody, but you have access. And you can, of course, learn without anybody finding out, which, of course, goes back to this thing of, you know, how much is there learning if nobody knows about it? Well, yes.
Well, I think we all probably do that elsewhere. I mean, if I learn something from a tutorial or a blog post, I don't always comment on it or whatever. Very often you learn from resources people put openly on the web, and you just... you're in the middle of something, you need to know how something works, you stick a question into Google, back it comes. And I guess I'm much more likely to say, this is probably bad, but I'm much more likely to say thank you if it's somebody I know, but there's plenty of people I don't know that I've learned from. If it's a big thing, I might link to it somewhere, or, you know, write a blog post about it and say this is a good resource. But quite often, if I'm just trying to do something, I'll just grab it and run on, you know. It's still learning. Exactly.
Which is this, you know, the whole thing about the you know, I guess to Alan's point about people, you know, where people drop in, they say something, but actually, you know, you just don't know. Some of the people that I might have said for the Headless 13, oh, they dropped out, or we never heard about them, and could we have done something more to keep them, you know, involved, might have carried on all the way and just decided they didn't want to write about it. Mm. But they were using it to learn.
It may just not have had enough time to write it up.
Exactly.
Mm. And I guess that this all fits. I mean, I'm looking at the end of that quote that you put from Alan. He says, "I would rather have people fade away than have them participate out of some guilt or threat of losing a silly badge," which is kind of fine if you're teaching an open online course. If you're educating younger people in a more formal situation, I'm not saying guilt would be a good thing, but sometimes a silly badge or a sticker is quite a good thing, because you have got a duty of care to these people, which
Excuse
we don't.
Excuse me, we have a very meaningful badge that we get if we do our work, as you know, because both you and I have it, so you know.
Yeah.
It's a very meaningful badge, not a what did Alan call it? A silly badge. We don't have any of those.
But, you know, I think that's one of the things that's nice, is not to be doing something for the love of it, and not to be getting, you know, there is no badge, there is no award to do it in an open course. And I know some MOOCs and things do.
But there is peer pressure when you're doing the actual course, because I have to say, and I may be alone in this, the amount of, you know, I used to follow all the instructions when I was actually doing the Headless 13 every week, you know, and write my process and write my thing and what I did, everything I would do each week. I can't really say that I have continued to write up quite so faithfully since that ended.
No, I don't think.
I mean, I'm sure you do, John.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just remember Jim Groom saying somewhere to me, he says, "I just do what you like." He says, "You seem to like gifts, just do gifts." If that's what I'm told to do, that's fine. I think there is some. It's a very interesting situation where it's a course where you can do this bit that Alan's talking about, taking the bit you need, but also be in a community, and that's quite unique, I think. I know you can do that in a MOOC, and lots of people tell you, I take a bit of it only, I look at a bit of a MOOC, but you're not in the community if you're doing that, you're driving by. And
we also have those other kinds of people. We haven't had a lot of those of late. The kind of people that kind of do the lurking that Kathy's talking about, they keep an eye on the stream, they find out things, etc. And sometimes when they need something, they pop a tweet with the DS106 saying, "I need blah blah blah. Can one of you make me something?" And I've responded to that sometimes, because somebody needs, you know, I don't know, a slide for a presentation or a something, you know, go, "Oh, well, all right. I don't even know who these people are, but I've done it a couple of times because that would be really easy for me to do." But somebody's going, "Oh, I know that you people would know how to do it. I need it, but I don't know how to do it." And I think that's really nice that people feel able to sort of just ask.
you can obviously not ignore the request. There's Alan just tweeted a nice Western 106 advert saying, "Badges not needed, blogs are." And that looks like a shot, I'm guessing,
from the
we don't need no stinking badges, stinking badges, the original.
It's the Western 106, DS106 dot tricks or something, isn't it? That he's got the website for the Western 106 that is starting early next year. But excuse me, we are going to have a Calamity Jane Tokitina badge, aren't we? I'm sorry, but you know, I think that is just a deal breaker.
Yeah. haven't spent my or misspent my youth on watching westerns and reading cowboy books. I'm resisting the temptation to sign up for a not badge with as much will as I can, but I guess I may ride by or mosey on down occasionally to the western, as long as the accent is not needed. Yeah, okay, thank you all. That's Gold Hat from the Treasure of the Sierra Madre, who had the stinking badges line. Right, yeah.
He's been watching. He's been using the course next year to enjoy himself watching lots of old movies.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is a great thing.
Yeah, you probably can't watch too many westerns. I don't think I'm in a western watching household anymore, unfortunately. So
the reason why I was saying about the Calamity Jane, Tokitina badges, because I think we had a tweet from Toki a little while ago saying that she had the Calamity Jane and something else. She had the outfits ready. So there you go.
We'll look forward to that.
We'll look forward to it.
So I think we've kind of covered our bullets there, Mariana.
I think we have.
We probably haven't answered the Jim Coon question.
Why do we do it? Have we answered the question?
Yeah. Well, Alan, it'd be great if you did bring a posse to Scotland.
What's he doing?
That'd be super. And I think there may be a yippee. Oh, yeah, it's time to stop. I'm going to round up with back to Jim Coon question. Which we didn't, yeah.
Calamity Jane Tokitina badge. Yes, I think we should have one. Sorry, but I think, you know, if we get that, then I'm in.
Yeah.
Yes, I think we're descending into chaos now, aren't we?
Yeah. So, we're back to Jim Broom's question. Why do we do it? But more importantly, why do we stay or keep coming back? And we've sort of rambled around that. Community, good pals, and I think that's relationships and things, and yeah, probably the course instructors and the way people
are making art
connections, making artifacts. I'm trying to think of a better way to say "damn it." That's not as rude.
Oh,
I think that's what I'm
going to. Sorry, I didn't know that we are before the watershed.
Yeah, no, I just thought if we made artifacts and we could have something that was less emphatic than "damn it."
It just came out. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not really. I'm just thinking for that quote, I could morph it into, you know, if I'm not strong enough to make art, damn it, I can make artifacts, perhaps. I don't know. I need a word that begins with D, though, unfortunately. Anyway. We've enjoyed ourselves, folks. We hope you've enjoyed yourselves listening, I think we could say. And we'll probably select a bumper from the bumper box. And then maybe there's...
We should be making some Western 106 bumpers already.
Yeah. Well, there's a nice one. Well, it's bullets, and I'm going to rework that with a Mexican theme or something.
Yes.
But I thought, since the weather here is so appalling, and we've got Mr. Cogdog in the listeners, will play out with DS 106 spelling on a Sunday afternoon. That would be nice.